Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome to Fireteam Chat, IGN's Destiny show. Thank you so much for joining us. Joining me today in the studio is CJ Gibson.
What's up?
Steph Rue.
Hey, Guardians.
Zach.
And me, your host, Destin LeGarry.
That was your Fran impression. Yeah. All right. Needs work.
Good to have you here, Fran.
Yeah.
Yeah. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the leaked rumor thing that's coming from Reddit about Destiny 3. Apparently, there's some details from a semi-reliable source who's been right about some stuff. Anyway, we're going to talk about the quality of life change, and we're going to take a look back at Forsaken. It's been a while since launch. We're going to talk about our favorite things. Let's get right into it. So, don't forget, you can watch first on IGN, and then one day later on YouTube.com/FireteamChat. We launch every Friday at 5 on IGN, then one day later, Saturday at 5 p.m., YouTube.com/FireteamChat. So, the first story is all about Destiny 3, you guys. Anon the Nine is saying that it takes place on Europa, that there's going to be a PvPvE mode that's not like The Division, that the Guardians can use the darkness. Development is starting right now. Chris Barrett is the game director. Luke Smith is still there in a big role, and they're going balls out with the RPG stuff. So that's what's going around on Reddit.
Rumor.
Okay. We have to label it rumor because it's some guy on Reddit.
Yeah.
But apparently people are saying he's been right about a few things. I wasn't able to verify what he's been right about yet. So what are we thinking about this? What's your temperature?
So
you in the red, you in the cold, in the middle?
I mean, so here's the thing. I think that I remember something like this before when we were talking about Rise of Iron.
Yeah.
And then Rise of Iron came out. So, I mean, it feels odd that that would be happening so soon. Mm-hmm. I don't personally believe that it's, you know, real. I believe that there's obviously maybe some merit to these people being involved, and obviously there's a Destiny or Destiny 3 coming. But, yeah, to know the details about it this soon, I don't think so.
Yeah. So, like, if we look back at, like, the original game trailer, File 1, Andres, we can actually see the original concept of what Destiny was supposed to be. And I collected some assets here to kind of take us through up to Destiny 2 and what the game ended up becoming. What do we think about these mechanics? Like, what do you like the idea of being able to choose darkness or light as your power, Steven? And like, what would be your take on a PvP VE mode where you could fight for territory and grief other players?
It sounds really interesting. It also says that they are going balls out with the RPG stuff. And before Destiny 1 first came out, I always thought it would be like that. I thought it'd be really heavily PvE focused. Mm-hmm. And it turned out like it wasn't really PvE focused, but I'm hoping they take Forsaken, they amplify it, and they just make like an amped up version of Forsaken, because Forsaken's awesome.
Yeah.
I've always wanted Destiny 3 to kind of be like, did you guys ever play Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic?
Yes, I did actually.
Yeah. So the first one, you're a character, you're Revan, which is like this big Sith Lord, and you can turn, you can choose if you're good or bad.
Yeah.
But in the second one, the sequel, you play as a different character and you hear like tidbits of Revan and what you did in the first game. And I've always kind of thought it would be interesting if we were like a different Guardian in Destiny 3 and we'd hear about like our Guardian now and like the crazy triumphs that we've done. And like, I don't know, I thought that'd be cool.
So basically what we're doing today is we're going to play along. We're going to assume that this rumor is founded. And just so you know, like, we're not saying that this is true or anything. So we're just going to kind of go with the conversation that's going on right now. I really like the idea of being able to choose darkness or light. Really happy to hear that Christopher Barrett is game director and that Luke Smith is still has a big role at the company.
Yeah.
You know, two longstanding faces there. But if we look back at this Destiny 1 footage, the main focus was the darkness in all the promotional materials. And I feel like we got pretty far away from that, and they brought it back by the time we got to Forsaken. But yeah, man. And we never saw Europa. It was sort of hinted about in some of the stuff, but it would have been great to see more of Europa.
Yeah,
I think one of the maps are on Europa. Maybe.
Is it? I don't know. But I know there's a lot of concept art for it. And if you look back, all the concept art that was shown off has always been in the game later on.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you guys remember, but way back early in Destiny 1, there were concept arts of the Titan using a shield, the Dawn Blade, and they were like, oh, cool. It's like concepts that never made the game, and look what happened.
Yeah.
Eventually they did. I want those frogs, the big frogmen.
Oh, yeah, the big
that you
frogs,
can ride.
The wolf or the tiger.
The tigers.
Yeah,
the sitting
tiger.
Next to the plants.
I actually did
a
great interview with Christopher Barrett about like the stuff that they had to sacrifice, and they're like, we leaned a little bit too much into fantasy, is what he said. And they kind of had to get rid of some of that super early stuff. But yeah, you're right. They were able to revisit and see, hey, like, let's get that shield in there. Oh, there. Remember Aldrin?
Aldrin, yeah.
Like,
Aldrin.
That scene never takes place in the game.
Yeah, it's crazy to see all this stuff because, I mean, when you look at how small the Nova Bomb is.
The Nova Bomb. Like,
I actually remember I was actually at, I think it was E3, probably 2015, no, 14. I can't remember now which was the one where they played through the first part there. I was with Fran, actually.
Yeah.
And it's pretty crazy to be in the audience and see that just before Destiny 1 was released because – yeah, when you look back at pre-alpha footage and
capture that demo three times,
I was
they let
wondering.
Me capture it.
Yeah,
and they had it down to a T. There were slight variations in each demo, so they were playing live.
Yeah,
but man, it was pretty.
Well, yeah,
on
like
point.
It was, but it didn't. It's funny when you look back at what Destiny 1 became. There was a lot of things. I think there was even like more than like 6 to 8 people in a public event. It almost seemed like you could, all just magically show up and kill this walker. Like there was things that obviously made it to the game, but then there was other things that didn't or evolved over time, but that's pretty natural, I think, in game development. And it's weird looking back at all these moments because you do get like crazy memories, nostalgia moments from Destiny 1.
Huge nostalgia.
Yeah, and it was that long ago. Like it's only like 3 or 4 years, right? But I mean, it was just a lot of hype like leading up to this game.
So with this stuff in mind, going balls out with RPG stuff, and
how many times are we gonna say
I want to get at least three in. I want to get
all
three
right,
in
just check
bad phrasing. Anyway,
what?
So there's that, and he also went on to say, I don't have the quote here, but he did say that they know that this is going to like scare off the
like
casuals,
more
and they're not really worried about it. And look at what happened with Forsaken, right? Forsaken might be scary to casuals,
yeah,
but look how many people are playing Destiny again because there's interesting things happening. I actually misspoke last week. I said not a lot is going on. Yes, there was a lot of stuff going on. It was like the busiest week ever. Meatball was in the game and all these things were happening.
I got him. I got the Meatball.
Yeah, and CJ got him. I didn't have time to play because I was finishing Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh.
I finished the whole campaign. That's why I've been in Red Dead Land. Well, I can't wait for everybody to get to play that game because I know a lot of people want to check it out.
No Meatball yet, though?
I haven't had time to play.
So how many gamut matches have you ran? Because we were talking about – because Fran
– we looked. It was like 97.
Okay.
Fran ran 3.
And Fran ran 3. Exactly. So I think I looked at how many primevals I had, and it's like 80 to 100. So I probably ran maybe 40 to 50 matches. So it's interesting to see how many different sort of variations are to people's games. And you played 100 and something, didn't you, to get it?
I think I played 103 or something.
Yeah,
we had a really solid team, though, and we would go on long streaks.
CJ was solo, though.
Yeah, I actually
– solo, dude.
I did.
You got it solo?
It was funny. I got I hit a photo of the teammates, and it was crazy. Yeah, I went in, I didn't know them, and dude, that moment when he spawns, I was in my bedroom, and my wife was in the living room, and I was like, oh my gosh! She's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine, sorry, and I got all giddy, and I was like, oh dear God, teammates, don't suck now. And 17 kills is what I ended up having. Mm-hmm. To actually do it. So there was a combination of me invading and two other people taking him down. But that is an exciting moment. That's one of those things where when it happens, you're like, it's a mix of, okay, this is rare. It's a coveted weapon. I want to get it. And yeah, that was probably one of my craziest moments so far. With Destiny. So
let's reel it back in to this topic at hand, the Destiny 3 rumor. What, besides this stuff does sound cool. What is something that absolutely needs to remain intact besides the gunplay? I think we can all agree the gunplay is pretty solid. What's something that needs to be added or something that needs to remain, if you guys can think of that? For me, I'll tell you that I want to see those fleshed out RPG mechanics. I want to see guns that sort of evolve. I really like the Solstice of Heroes, which we have a clip of.
Yeah.
The Solstice of the Heroes arm revolution was one of the coolest mechanics that I've seen Destiny do in a while. So really, really like that. And I would love to see more of that in Destiny. Like, what if you started with tattered armor and you built it up and you became super powerful? And there were many different gear sets that just looked really, really cool and well-designed. That's what I would like to see fleshed out a little more. Do one of you guys have a prepared answer?
Yeah, I mean, here's what I'm wondering, and I'm interested to see what you guys think. I've had this comment about PUBG and Fortnite and all these other games that are out right now. And I think Destiny's biggest challenge, obviously, is that it is constantly in a state where it's trying to appease multiple audiences, different type of people. Would you want Destiny to be a PvE only game and forgo PvP, traditional PvP?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either, like for me personally, but it's amazing when you actually look at all the different people and what they want. There's always this sense that there's a PvE crowd and a PvE crowd.
PvE and PvP.
PvE and PvP crowd. Yeah. And they don't really kind of want to play nice together, or they think that, you know, the thing that I want is most important. And I think that's really difficult for them to, you know, I always say that for balancing the game is tough. I'm curious if we put that survey out there, what would people want? Like, I don't know if people would want an exclusively PvE game, but if you listen to comments.
What are you saying you want?
I'm saying, so that's what's weird, is that I personally like PvP better, but I don't know if you could make Destiny exclusively a PvE game.
Simple question. Why not both? What's the problem with having both?
So right now, I think the issue with having both is how do you constantly balance or make a game that is exclusive that people feel like they can grind into and get into what that game is.
So do you feel they've done a poor job of that, especially with the current update?
I don't think they've done a poor job. I think that they
can do. Hot seat.
No. I think that they've done exactly what they, you know, can do, and that's it. Like, I think if you look at like Fortnite and PUBG and anything that's PvP focused only, there's just like Fortnite is doing amazing things within the context of that space, but they don't really have to deal with any of these other problems that Bungie has. So I'm curious.
Like, I think if they were to do it separately, CJ, it would lose the magic of getting those weapons in the wild that are good and good in PvP versus PvE.
So I think so as well. Like, and to me, that's what's special about Destiny. But imagine if that Destiny did had potentially a PvP focused only mode, and it was exclusive to what that is, and it had nothing to do with grinding for PvE.
You mean like Halo?
Yes, and you take all the elements. So maybe there is a Destiny 3, but it actually splits, you know, those facets of the game, and they have absolutely nothing to do with each other.
I absolutely hate that idea.
Thank you, CJ. That's fine,
Steven. What's your thing that the game needs?
Well, the game needs. Well, can I chime in on what CJ said?
So, yeah, we do have to move on to the next.
Yeah. So,
and I want you to have your chance.
I think Forsaken, it's a pretty good blend right now. Mm-hmm. I think what happened in Destiny 1 is people wanted it to be a competitive esport, and like
they are not moving in that direction.
I think once people realize that this game is not an esport, it's not competitive. There are things that are always going to be broken. Like right now, there's too many shotguns, et cetera, et cetera, and there's exotics. I think once people realize that it's not going to be that, and they just embrace it for what it is, which I have done, because
me too.
Personally in D1, I wish it was, I really wanted it to be an esport.
Yeah.
I realize in D2 it's not going to happen. There's no custom games. There's no spectator mode.
But
there's
that
things
was
broken.
That was the weird thing about Destiny 2 Year 1, the way it launched. You thought that potentially
I
it was
going to
be
off.
That.
You're going on a whole different topic.
No, I know.
PvE versus PvP. I really want to wrap up the segment about what you want from Destiny 3.
What I want in Destiny 3.
And then
we can revisit this.
What do you want?
What I want in Destiny 3 is I want them to take Forsaken and expand it. I want hundreds of weapons, hundreds of armor sets. I don't want reskins. I want them to really dive into the PvE part of the game. And we're going to talk about this later when we talk about what's our favorite part in Forsaken. But I really want them to just dive balls deep into the PvE, into the PvE section.
That sounds great. Anyway, we're going to move on. Seeing these guys have already started the conversation of our next topic a little bit ahead of time, we're going to go right into the Forsaken launch and what we've been enjoying about it. CJ brought up this hypothesis of splitting PvE and PvP, and these two are in a discussion about why that would or would not work. So, guys, continue. You were talking about it. I had to cut you off because we need to get the break out of the show. Okay. So, yeah.
All right.
I'm like, all right, we're 13 minutes in. I need to get that break out.
That's fine. Yeah, okay.
But
sorry.
Sorry about that. So please continue with your conversation and tell us what you like the most about Forsaken right now.
So it's weird. I mean, I think that a lot of the – I like the way Bungie is addressing and fixing everything very quickly that needs to be addressed. They did not do that in year one, and it almost was like a coy kind of way where it's like we're listening and then like the changes would not happen or the changes were very minor. This is perfect. They are addressing everything from masterwork cores, changing them to enhancement cores, spider bounties, all the rest of that stuff. There's a bunch of different things that they're doing where if you have problems in the context of the game, what are you guys laughing at?
You're going wherever you want with the show plan. talking about topic three.
That's what I'm saying I like. I like the fact that they're addressing all these things quickly and you're not constantly waiting for them to, you know, because you were constantly looking at updates going, oh, when is it going to happen? But so right now, I love the gunplay in PvE. I like, you know, the exotics not being super attainable, but they're addressing like how those work as well too. I play a lot of PvP and I like, the chase right now for power. Like I'm still not at 600. I'm around like 590, but that's been good for the last month and a half as well too.
So. Yeah, I'm just fine being at 590. If I had more time to play, I would play more Destiny. There's just too many games right now.
Yeah.
Splitting your attention is difficult.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of good things right now. Like I think I agree with Steven. Like I think Forsaken is in a great place and I find myself, like I said, logging on daily or every couple days to just do regular bounties. Getting the Ikora bounty to do like 20 of them. And I'm doing a lot of the different triumphs to actually just play and get, emblems and badges and stuff like that. Yeah. So that's cool. I mean, I dig that.
They had an awesome cadence for like six, maybe I'll even go as far as seven. It's eight, Steven, you said 8 weeks since launch.
Yeah.
Right. And man, they have just had constantly added things for you to do and play in Destiny 2. And this is great.
Yeah.
This is how Destiny used to be. Yep. It kind of got back to the heart of what's interesting about the property. And I hope they continue with that, like you said.
Yeah, when you say it wasn't a busy week last week, I think what you were really talking, because I saw
it wasn't a new thing.
It wasn't something new. Exactly. There was, you know,
it was a
first week. It was like Festival Lost. There was lots of stuff to do, but there was nothing maybe that wasn't necessarily like a brand new thing.
Yeah.
But besides Festival Lost, but still really good. They've been doing well.
Yeah. So, Steven, the question is, what's your favorite thing about Forsaken since launch?
Okay. We're just not talking about the PvP and PvE thing, huh?
See, I threw him the ball, and he's like, nah, I'm going to talk about something else now.
I never know where this is, where I'm allowed to go.
Yeah, I'll just finish that. There's a marriage between PvP and PvE in Destiny, where you can get random roles that are better in PvE or are better in PvP.
Yeah.
You can do that with armor too, and I think that is a huge, drawing in Destiny, what people love about it. Like, I'm gonna use a hand cannon in PvP, so I'm gonna try to get hand cannon gauntlets, like, and armor and stuff like that. So, specking for that is really cool. If you did separate the two, like you were talking about, and it would just be like Halo, like, every assault rifle is gonna be the same, every hand cannon is gonna be the same, every sniper is gonna be the same. And then I think you'd have to, like, neuter the classes too. Like, the classes are so different and they're so unbalanced.
Yeah.
Like, four Titans might have an advantage over 400s or whatever like that. If you're going to separate the two, you'd have to make everyone the exact same.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know if the Destiny community is like that anymore.
I'm not saying I would want that, but when I read the comment section, I'm saying that I see a lot of people say, I don't care about PvE or I don't care about PvP.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
Yeah, it's one or the other. And there's this constant struggle, which is the reason why a lot of people do like Gambit. I think that there was maybe some more competitive rewards.
But I think that's...
But it's the same problem Call of Duty faces, right? And they got rid of the campaign.
Yeah.
But I think that's a big separation between Destiny because... You're not talking about getting rid of the campaign. You're talking about separating two modes.
Yes.
And Call of Duty has zombies in there, which would basically be your PvE.
Yeah.
And Call of Duty has Blackout, which is your PvP, your high-end competitive stuff, as well as their their other competitive mode.
I think it's a good combination. I don't think they should ever separate it. But moving on, what my favorite part of Forsaken is I love how lore heavy it is. We've never had
three.
We've never had so much lore like intertwined into the story. Like you could run around, find Grimoire and Ghosts, and like you can go on Bungie.net and read it. But now it's in the game.
Yeah.
And not only is it in the game for reading, I won't spoil the Malfeasance quest, but there's a part in the Malfeasance quest where you do this mission and they talk about the past, and it like they've never done something like that before.
File 3.
Yeah. Andres, play the third file.
So, like, so Malfeasance, yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that. I haven't done the quest.
I won't spoil it, but like it's so lore intensive. Like even with the whole Kara and Riven, like they really talk about all these lore things that I feel like they haven't done at all up until Forsaken.
Mm-hmm.
Last week when the curse was the strongest, if you enter Marasov's throne world, you can see the pyramid ships in there.
That was a really cool
pyramid ships at the end of
at the end of the campaign, for those that don't know, the pyramid ships are like the last thing you see coming towards Earth,
the
and
light.
Mara apparently has been tracking them and they're on the way.
She's tracking him, like she doesn't even talk about it, and if you think about it, our guardian would have no idea what the hell that is, because only us as the player saw that in the cutscene, right? So only she knows about it, and it's like they tie into like all these lore things, and I think it's so cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, the weird thing, and that's the other conversation though, is that how many people get a chance to experience those things? Right now, I haven't gotten the Malfeasance. This guy doesn't. There are a lot of things like that sometimes don't, come into play if you don't grind.
But to like piggyback off that, you have to be a pretty, I don't like saying the word hardcore, but you have to be a pretty big fan of Destiny to realize that. Like, if you were just playing through it and somehow you did go into the throne world, like, you wouldn't know like what that was, or you wouldn't catch up onto it. And that for that Destiny 3 rumor, what did it say? They're gonna like
darkness.
Well, it's gonna be. You said it's gonna be like super hardcore, right? I want that stuff. Like,
yeah,
I can't wait for that stuff. If it is true,
I'd love if they leaned more into that. The final topic that we were gonna talk about, we touched on it a little bit. Thanks, CJ. Was the exotic the quality
You're
of
welcome.
Life changes, which is file 2 for our producer in the back. The quality of life changes.
It's
which
calling everybody to. Out today, dear God.
Well, we jumped around and never mind. Quality of life changes. So a lot of stuff is changing in Destiny. And the most important piece of this is that exotics are being adjusted. So it means that you're going to get fewer duplicate exotics. And here's what they said. It takes into account all exotics found and weighs them against exotics you have yet to acquire. This lowers the chances of receiving exotics you already own. Those you do not own will be individually weighed higher. When getting exotic dupes, you will be more likely to get armor pieces as they have random rolls. So like the exotics have random rolls. That's really interesting for dupes. And exotic quest weapons are being removed from the exotic engram loot pool. So that's really, really interesting.
So random rolls for exotics?
Yeah.
Armor.
Armor. Right. Yeah, armor. And that was the same with the glass needles in Destiny? There was some kind of like
you function. Can re-roll.
You could re-roll them in Destiny 1.
Yeah. There's a few exotics being tuned. Wish Ender's getting increased base damage. Malfeasance is getting increased explosive shadow detonation damage. Do you remember the trailer versus the the in-game? Like literally nothing happens.
I'm sorry. Malfeasance is terrible.
Yeah. I'm glad you got it. I'll get it once it's buffed.
Test it out.
Glad I played 100 gamma matches for it.
Ace of Spades.
Oh, I think they show it in this trailer. I don't know if we missed it, but
Yeah, it's coming up after this, actually.
Yeah.
It's
one of the final ones. We'll see it in just a second if you're watching.
Ace of Spades is the hand cannon. I mean, right there. Mm-hmm. If you're using any other hand cannon even in PvE, it's pretty solid. Like, it's hard to use anything else. It's just the range, the damage, and the impact. Like, there's so many, like, good perks that proc when you're crushing them. So I've not actually gotten, the Contra weapon, as they've dubbed it.
The AR?
Is it the three round that shoots three? I can't even remember what it's called.
The Cerberus
rifle.
Do you have it or no?
Yeah, I have
it. Auto rifle. So, I have it too. I really like it actually for Gambit. It's great for ad clears.
Okay.
But I usually swap it out because I want a different exotic.
Gotcha.
But I was having a lot of fun with it messing around. So this is just great. I just want to kind of keep people informed about the quality of life changes.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
So all in all,
That's, I mean, here's the thing. We have 8 more minutes left. Do you have any other topics? Because I got one that we can now talk about since Fran Mirabelle is not here.
Oh, the raid.
The raid.
We can actually talk about the raid without spoiling
it. We got Fran, later. If you're out there, just turn off the show, okay?
Yeah, so what do you want to talk about, Siege?
I mean, really, we haven't got a chance to even dive into the mechanics and what we thought of the actual progression of it or anything like that.
Let's just start at the end with Riven.
Yeah.
Well, the main big encounter, there's Riven, and then there's the orb carry at the very end. So spoiler warning to anybody who has not completed the raid, Fran, and wants to wait a little bit. But I think everybody's at the point where they can attempt it now.
Yes.
Blind or otherwise. Like, you got to do some coordination to attempt it that way.
Yep.
But I really, really like the Riven encounter.
Yeah.
I like that it forces everybody to play a part.
Yes.
Unless you do the glitch where you shoot all the rockets into his mouth. But even that's sort of fun too, right?
Yeah.
Like finding out something like that is really, really interesting.
Yeah. You did it week one. What were some of your biggest challenges at like 540 or 560 light versus now? Because you've probably played it a few times since. Like, what was the hardest part when you were playing it going for like the world's first thing?
Yeah, you had to play really carefully because like anything could kill you. You basically had two hits. Some of our guys had one hit, maybe one and a half.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's all that they had at their disposal.
Yeah.
Beyond that, yeah, man, it was just about team coordination and make like we're all tired. We all got to like shoot certain eyes and figuring out the mechanics. Figuring out the mechanics blind is actually a really, really fun thing to do. And
it was pretty hard. Like, did you guys actually get into a situation where you were stream sniping other people, where you were looking at what they were doing to get an advantage about
We got to a point where like two teams have gotten past the vault.
Yeah.
And nobody knew what they had done. Like nobody understood it.
Ball was difficult. I will
say. Like Daddle said he like accidentally got past it. So it was difficult
like
for ball.
He didn't they didn't really know what was happening. Yeah.
So some of the guys on the team were trying to stream snipe, but the info was just not there.
Right.
So we weren't able to, and we ended up figuring out Vault ourselves. It was Illegal Knot and Teddy's brother.
Yeah. I think Vault was probably the most difficult like puzzle encounter that I can ever remember in Destiny, like a number, penumbra, left, right. Like there was so many things that when you're talking with people, like, oh, what happened? What's on your side? I remember running around in circles trying to see everybody's different plates to see what were the corresponding logos and trying to like decipher something. Mm-hmm. It didn't make sense. And even now, it's still a little difficult to go through and figure out what's happening.
It's so awesome to see that my numbering for the eyes ended up being the widely adopted numbering system for the eyeballs.
So I wasn't sure if that was the case because the weird thing is if it was you or whoever it was, I don't like it because I want it to go left to right.
Yeah.
I want it to go L1, L2 on the top.
But everyone goes
rather than this. It's really odd. Because
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is how I went. And then 6, 7, 8 or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And that's fine. Yeah. The right side's fine. The left side should go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, you can do it however you want.
No, but you can't now because that's what's mostly out there. And that's kind of what people say.
I'll take credit for it.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I remember Grenader Jake did this crazy thing where they did like the top row and then the middle row, and I'm like, no, the eyes are too like googly.
Yeah.
Googly-eyed.
But it was cool though to those first, I'm going to talk about Riven for a second, to jump up there, not know what's happening, then you go behind the little like glass part, you see all these logos. Yeah. It's super overwhelming and like the dragon calling
up
kills
even when you
coming out with the call out.
Even when you drop down for the first time and you see Riven.
So we were talking about last week and
my reaction was like, "What?"
Yes. Yeah. I think is that probably one of the coolest boss reveal moments besides Oryx? I think Oryx and that one are both pretty cool.
Oryx is still the coolest. That's pretty cool too, though.
Yeah.
Riven. I like larger than life enemies.
Ignore that.
I don't know what that was. I like larger than life enemies that you get to encounter. Oryx is like just hard to top, man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I remember you saying, I think spark Riven. When you run out there.
Yeah.
Like you freak people.
I would
out.
Troll people.
Yeah.
I think Riven was cooler than me, than Oryx, because you knew what Oryx looked like.
That's true. Yeah. There's some merit to that. I don't think that you realized how big he was in the final encounter.
Yeah. So when you drop really down cool. and you're like, what the hell? It's a dragon.
Yeah. What is that? It's got like gross scabs.
That was
on the back. We shoot him
but
later.
You shoot later and you're just like, what is happening?
So I'm going to say a super popular opinion that I know I'm going to get flamed.
Unpopular?
For. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think it's unpopular.
All right.
A lot of people are like, oh, I think it's stupid that it's damage gated or light level gated. Because remember, you had to get to like 40, right?
Yeah.
535, 540 yeah. to like even stay
alive. We were in the 40 to 50 range and we were able to complete it.
Yeah.
I think we were in the 50s when we beat it.
And I believe like most of the people were like, this is so stupid. We didn't have enough time to get to that.
Did you watch the show with Fran on it?
yeah, I did. But I think that's what a raid should be. You should, the first time you do it, you should be underleveled.
Yeah.
Should be super challenging the first time you do it.
The grind itself to get to that point should be fun and challenging. And then when you first start the raid, everyone's super underleveled. Az will kill you.
Yeah.
So on top of finding out what is going on and the mechanics, you have to stay alive and play your life and kill things together, right? So that's what makes the hard, that's what makes the raid hard. And people, you can argue it's artificially hard.
Yeah.
But that, like, to me, that's how they have to do it, because now everyone's like 590 to 600. The ads won't kill you. You just have to do the mechanics now.
Yeah.
You can do a raid in like 30, 40 minutes.
But people are still struggling with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, that's a good thing. But like now, like I can do it. Like the first raid took what? 23 hours, right?
Yeah.
Now you can do it in 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think that's how a raid should be. The first couple of experiences you have with it should be super hard.
Yeah.
And then you should be doing it just for the drops, right?
I mean, I think so too. Like, I get Fran's point. Like, Fran's point was like the communication of can I attempt this or not was not there. And there was an expectation.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If you grinded for like 2 weeks straight that you know, in theory, you should be able to do it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I agree, like, there are people out there that wanted to be part of that race,
right,
or didn't have the time to do it. And like, I understand where they're coming from, but like, to me, it should be like a special moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
like an achievement.
People are mad that like, if you didn't have 12 hours a day to do this, you were going to be like 520 to 530.
Yeah.
But I think this current, the way they did, The Last Wish, I think is a fantastic way, because you should be able to, like, struggle through it for the first 2-3 weeks, and then as you progressively get higher gear, it should be something that doesn't take like a couple of hours, right? It should be 30-40 minutes. Like, hey, you want to just hop on, do a raid, bang it out, get the gear.
Yep.
I don't know how they would be able to continue to make it hard and not make it impossible when you're 530-540.
If they're not going to do, and they're not for this one, prestige raids, that would be the only thing. And I think that the best prestige raid was probably Oryx, because there's a bunch of mechanics that were added to it.
New mechanics.
Different. Yeah. And if that's, like, because that wasn't really the case with Destiny, like, at least with Leviathan and Argos and stuff like that.
I don't know who tweeted it. It was a raid designer at Bungie, but he tweeted saying, the hardest part about making a raid is making the first encounter like 20 hours and then every other encounter 30 minutes.
Right.
And I feel like they did a great job with Last Wish.
Yeah, it might have been Andrew.
What do you mean first encounter?
How do you make the first experience with your raid super long and hard? Because everybody wants a hard raid for for the first experience, right? But then after every subsequent experience, you just want the loot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You just want to get it through. So that's the hardest part of creating a raid. And I think the level scaling is how you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I seriously think Bungie just made a mistake with their calculated drop percentages. They thought people would be 550. That's where they thought people would be. They had the messed up engrams, so people were confused about what was going on. Unless you're reading BNet and being really careful about your drops, you didn't get in.
Yeah.
And I think that caused a lot of people saying, like, oh, they only want streamers to do it. And I don't think that's
intense.
The case at all.
I think
they'll adjust for it next time.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it was bad, but I think the conversation is, how much – do they want people to be able to access the raid? Because a lot of people, who still have not done it. Like, I texted Fran before the show. I know he hasn't done it yet.
Yeah. But he's at the level where he could do it.
He could do it.
He just wants to do it blind.
He wants to do it blind. So I understand.
Well, that's like
first
that's
experience.
Fran's thing, though.
Yeah.
Like, but that's not a game thing.
I think, and absolutely right. I think a lot of people still feel that way. They want that special moment of experience at the first time, figuring it out on their own.
It's a super hard balance, because doing a raid blind is a super cool experience.
Yeah, it is.
And the further you wait, or the longer you wait, the less chance you can do it blind.
Yeah.
And I feel for Fran, because I would not want to do the raid not blind.
Yeah.
But like, it's so hard to find a blind raid now.
Yeah.
Like, and so if you miss that window the first 2 weeks, it's like over. So I understand where Fran's coming from, but I do think because of how intensive they make it, it's that more special.
Special, unique.
Well, great final topic. I totally agree. I want the raid to be a special experience for everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Stephen.
What an elitist.
The wrap up.
What an elitist.
I was going to say thank you, Stephen, CJ Sorta, for being on the show today.
Sounds good.
Derailing the show.
Oh,
confusing
whatever.
Andres.
No, there's no derailing. I get that we need to have topics, but we got to like not be so just switch on a gear.
Fair. No, fair.
Can I pass? Can I take Fran's spot now?
No, you got to do better impressions next time.
Yeah, Stephen will be here. Sean would have been here, but he's at TwitchCon doing some producer work. So,
right.
Yeah, that's all that happened. Hey, thanks for watching. Don't forget to subscribe or check out our playlist of all our episodes if you missed one. Over on youtube.com/fireteamchat or on IGN.com.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.